to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Welcome back to the NXT Podcast. I am your host. My name is Zachary Smith, here to talk about the NXT from this week, coming off of NXT TakeOver In Your House, which was a fantastic show that we had on Sunday. We have a lot to talk about. Usually with NXT, the show after a pay-per-view or event like In Your House, it's more of a recap show, or it's more of just showing you and talking about what happened on In Your House or whatever the pay-per-view is. It's usually just got a few matches on it, and it just tries to further stories that we set up. And that's somewhat the case here, although we do have a lot of fun stuff to talk about coming from this week, and I'm very excited to get into it. Once again, I am Zachary Smith. You can find me on Twitter. I am ZachNXT. That's ZachNXT. Now, we usually talk about the news and notes going around in the wrestling world before we jump into the show proper. In this case, in light of Matt Riddle officially going to SmackDown, although he has not debuted yet, I wanted to talk about NXT call-ups in general, because it seems like we're going to have two or three coming up here. Obviously, we just had Bianca Belair debut on the main roster, although she hasn't done a ton since coming onto the main roster. And obviously, we have Matt Riddle, who is going to SmackDown. We also believe that Dominik Dijakovic is going to Raw. This is partially, I assume, because they very much like Matt Riddle and they very much like Dominik Dijakovic, but it's also because they need some bodies. For the most part, they're working with a skeleton crew, and there's some people that aren't comfortable coming back to work. That's completely understandable. And so you try and work with what you have, and unfortunately you don't have as much as you usually do. And adding a Dijakovic to Raw and a Riddle to SmackDown should help with that. Gives you different matchups. If you use your character seriously, it'll help with that as well. There used to be this overwhelming concern when an NXT talent was going to move to the main roster, because the track record of people on NXT versus people on the main roster, Raw or SmackDown, hasn't been the greatest. You have Asuka, who had her undefeated streak in NXT. She left without losing. And then on Raw, she becomes more of a comedy character and then becomes a tag team wrestler. Now she's worked her way back to Raw Women's Champion, but you maybe still don't take her as seriously as you did on NXT. Some fans don't like that. You do have success stories like a Kevin Owens or a Seth Rollins, where they come in, they're in NXT. In Kevin Owens' case, he wasn't in NXT very long, but he was NXT champion. And them being in NXT springboards them. Those cases seem few and far between compared to the people that moved up to the main roster, and things just didn't quite go right. It could be because the main roster doesn't know what to do with them quite as well. Could be because the people were presenting them better on NXT. So you have situations where you have gimmicks that probably weren't going to work. Tyler Breeze, the way his character was built, you could tell that when he went to the main roster, they weren't going to take that seriously. In NXT, he had this very specific gimmick, and he worked with some of the best wrestlers in the world. And in NXT, you can get by more with being very, very good in the ring. whereas on the main roster, they seem to want a very specific type of performer. You had the Ascension, who were undefeated for a time in NXT as a tag team. They were a mean, nasty group of dudes that just ran roughshod over the division. They get to the main roster, they're just a joke. You have the Vaudevillains, who were a very, very, very specific kind of gimmick that probably wasn't going to last. And so they go to the main roster, you're not sure why, and then they kind of fizzle out. And so we have Matt Riddle going to SmackDown. We know that one. We think we have Dominik Dijakovic going to Raw, and then the Velveteen Dream, who lost on Sunday, meaning as long as Adam Cole has the NXT title, Velveteen Dream can no longer challenge for it. If, based on this show, we get what we think, which is Karrion Kross versus Adam Cole at some point, you would presume that Adam Cole would lose it, Karrion Kross would get it. Point being, I don't see a point in keeping the Dream on NXT. He hasn't felt colder than he does now since he came onto the scene. And so I would be willing to bet that before long we're going to see the Dream on either Raw or SmackDown. Now, for Matt Riddle, his talent is beyond evident. He's one of the best in the ring, and he's got a very specific character that he plays, and when he plays that character, he's very good at it. The concern with somebody like Matt Riddle is that the main roster decision makers just see him as a comedy guy. He's just a stoner character. He's lackadaisical. He doesn't take things very seriously. And so if you only give people that aspect of his character with a SmackDown viewer that maybe doesn't watch NXT, they're not going to take him very seriously. If you present him as his character as it is, which is still the stoner guy, but when it comes to in the ring and with personal issues, he becomes a very serious killer, that could work. So at this point, it's up to the main roster decision makers to make sure that he's presented in such a way that he can be taken seriously. Because with somebody like Matt Riddle, I could see him very quickly assimilating to the main roster and becoming a standout and one of the best performers on the show. I could also see a scenario where he's just a comedy character that just kind of meanders his way through his time on the main roster. And so that's where some of that feeling of nervousness comes from, because you don't know how they're going to present them. Now, you hear that people are very high on Matt Riddle, but you just don't know until you see it, unfortunately. With Dominik Dijakovic, it feels like we didn't see a ton of him in NXT, although we saw a lot. He's somebody that, in terms of work and in terms of promos, I think can hang on the main roster. He's certainly a body guy in the way that WWE likes. So you would think that he is set up for success. He's also been a very serious character on NXT, so you would think that that would carry over. The only problem that I could see with Dijakovic is we don't really know him a lot. We heard him talk, we saw him work in NXT, but we didn't necessarily find out a ton about him. And that can actually be fine if he's going to Raw, because a lot of people who watch Raw and SmackDown do not watch NXT. So it's really just about how you present that character and how you debut them. If you want them to be a big deal, you put them in a situation that is a big deal. Think Karrion Kross attacking Ciampa, and then Scarlett laying down what seems to be a challenge for Adam Cole. So if he's debuted correctly, and if he's given the latitude to perform the way that he knows he can, he'll be just fine. If they can't find anything to do with him, the writers and decision makers on the main roster have a tendency to say, well, we just have nothing for you, as opposed to using one of the million writers you have to find something for somebody. And so hopefully they already have a plan for Dijakovic if he does go to Raw, and they can work from there. If Velveteen Dream's time in NXT is coming to a close. It seems like he set up maybe a tag match with him and Loomis against Undisputed Era, and then maybe they are leaving him for that, and then he's leaving. It just doesn't feel like he's going to be in NXT for very long. The Dream is 24 years old. He's already a great wrestler, he's a good talker, and he's got a very distinct character that should allow him to stand out even on the main roster. Here's the problem. The Dream is a very specific kind of character. The Dream is somebody that, if he were not presented in the way he is on NXT, he would be a joke. He would be just a weird comedy character. He would be Goldust, for example, who had a good career, but was never the most seriously taken performer. And so when he gets to the main roster, again, there's two ways that could go. One, they could be super high on him and see his potential and make tweaks to the character, because I think that would need to happen, where you might have to tone it down a bit for him to be taken seriously, and then let him come in, be this insane character and great worker, and go from there. Or they could see this as an opportunity for him to just be a weird Goldust type character, except it wasn't Vince's idea, so I don't know that he would take it as seriously. And if that happens, he's dead in the water, because once you're strapped with this kind of irrelevant comedy character, there's not a lot you can do to come back from it. And if he's put in that situation, that's just going to be another on the list of NXT superstars that, for one reason or another, didn't make it on the main roster. We haven't seen a ton of call-ups as of late. And in the past, there's been a history of them not being presented in the same way they were on NXT. But hopefully, the reason that they brought Matt Riddle up is because they see something in him and want to use him in an excellent way. And hopefully, if Dijakovic goes to Raw, they also see something in him, which it seems like they do. For most part, Dijakovic has been presented as nothing but a serious character. I think he'll be just fine. I think Matt Riddle is a coin flip. I don't know if they see him as a serious character or if they just see him as a joke machine. Velveteen Dream, I feel the least sure about because of the way his character is set up. I don't think his character would work as is on the main roster, because I don't know if you'd be able to present that as seriously as you do on NXT. And I think it's more likely that they think he's kind of a joke character. But, hopefully, I'll be proven wrong on all three of these guys, and they'll be great additions. With the way that WWE is set up for its shows right now, you're not fighting with as many people for time as you normally would. And so hopefully that gives them a chance to shine and make the most of it. You have a Sonya Deville on SmackDown, you have a Zelina Vega on Raw, an Apollo Crews. You have guys that and girls that are making the most of this opportunity more so than anybody, because they have more time, they're given a chance, and they've taken the ball and run with it. My hope is that they'll give the ball to Dijakovic and Matt Riddle and allow them to assimilate to the main roster and really show what it is that they can do, because they're both fantastic performers, as is the Velveteen Dream. I just hope that they get a chance to show it. But with that said, we're not worried about call-ups right now. What we're worried about is NXT proper. And so this week's NXT episode starts with a quick recap of In Your House, which again was Sunday. And it was cool. They showed clips of people celebrating wins and big moments in the matches, and they show clips of fans watching at home, and it also shows different superstars. It shows Mauro Ranallo calling Io Shirai winning the title. He's also at home. And that was very cool. It felt like a virtual hangout room where everybody was watching the show, and you got some of the fans' reactions that you would have heard if they were actually there. So I liked that. I liked that it kind of felt like a together thing. And we're starting with the Undisputed Era, with Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, and Roderick Strong coming out first. Commentary mentions that it's been 375 days for Adam Cole as NXT champion. And that's interesting because he's obviously the longest reigning NXT champion of all time. And he's been champion for over a year now, a year and 10 days. And with a lot of people, at this point, you would maybe start to get sick of a championship run because it's been the same guy on top this whole time. With Adam Cole, I don't feel that. When they said 375 days, I felt a little bit surprised. I was aware that he had been champ over a year. But it doesn't really feel like that to me. It feels like he is still a really good champion, and I like seeing him as champion. I like the Undisputed Era as a faction, and Adam Cole is one of, if not the best that they have on NXT right now. And so I don't know if it's that they've done a great job with the stories, or if he's had just a wide range of opponents, or if it's the fact that they did the main roster invasion for Survivor Series, so you got to see Adam Cole as a bigger deal facing Daniel Bryan on SmackDown. I'm not sure what it is, but I'm not at all sick of Adam Cole being NXT champion yet. Adam Cole says the era of Adam Cole as NXT champion will continue. Says that, did you guys actually think that the Velveteen Dream was going to beat me? And he says, that's nothing against the Velveteen Dream. It is. But we're on to the next, and as long as I am NXT champion, the Dream can no longer challenge for it. And so, he turns his attention to talking about Dexter Lumis and calls him a freak. And says that we're going to have a match tonight. Not only we're going to have a match tonight, I'm going to beat you. And not only that, I'm going to beat you badly. And Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish are in the ring. And Roderick Strong is looking at the crowd. And he says, there he is! There he is! And the camera pans over to where he's pointing. There's nobody there. They start talking again. And Strong does it again. He says, there he is. There he is. They don't see him again. And then the camera cuts from in the ring to outside where the Performance Center people are, looking up at the ring, and there's Dexter Lumis. So he snuck in, and Roderick Strong is the only one that can see him. It seems like Roderick Strong is the one that's been most affected by this, and it seems like that's who Dexter is focusing on. He's certainly focusing on all the members of Undisputed Era, but seems like Roderick Strong is the one that he likes the least. And I love what they're doing with Dexter Lumis. If you don't know, that after the Dream-Adam Cole match, Dexter Lumis made good on his promise in his drawing last week and kidnapped Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong, tied them up, put them in the car, just like the drawing said. And then it was funny because on Twitter, Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish were all selling it like, this freak took our friends, can anybody help? And they said that Strong and Fish were gone for about 12 hours. Roderick Strong's wife was tweeting, this freak took my husband, NXT fix this or I will. And then on Roderick Strong's Twitter account, I believe as of this morning, his last tweet was a close-up picture of Dexter Lumis. And so he hadn't tweeted, he hadn't done anything. So I guess Dexter took his phone and took a quick selfie, because he's a creepy guy. But he knows that he's a creepy guy, which is great. And so after 12 hours, they were finally returned. And I believe they said that Strong woke up in his laundry room, not knowing what had happened. And then his wife posted on Twitter that he's finally home, and he's been screaming and having nightmares. He said he screamed like 3 times in the last 20 minutes. That was a great job of selling it. Social media can be great for selling an angle like this. And so we're doing the is he or is he not there with Dexter Lumis. It's weird, but I like it. It's this creepy killer who's just stalking the Undisputed Era. And even if you beat him down, that's not going to stop him. And so up next, we're told that Keith Lee and Mia Yim are going to take on Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae. Team Mia beat Team Candice at TakeOver, and Keith Lee successfully defended the North American Championship against Gargano on Sunday. And the Undisputed Era are now up by the entrance ramp next to the Titantron. And once again, it cuts to the outside looking in on the corner. And there's Dexter Lumis again. This is the first time that commentary notices him. And so he's following the Undisputed Era throughout the day. And Adam Cole and Bobby Fish are trying to calm down Roderick Strong, who is really the one who's by far most affected by this. And Keith Lee and Mia Yim walk up to them. And Keith Lee says, "You know, I've been wondering what's next for me. But I think I might know what's next." And Undisputed Era walks off. Adam Cole says, "Yeah, let him talk. In your dreams, big man." And Keith just laughs and says, "Soon enough." And so at this point in the show, you think that maybe Keith Lee's going after two titles. Maybe we're doing that. And it doesn't seem like that's what we're doing anymore based on what we set up later in the show. But that certainly would have been interesting. I think it's more likely that Keith Lee's going to be on the main roster than it is that he's going to be NXT champion. I just think that if he's NXT champion, they're going to want to keep him around for a while. And I know that Vince loved Keith Lee, and that's why he had such a showing at Survivor Series and the Royal Rumble. That seems like a guy that they would want on the main roster. So I don't know that I expect him to win the NXT title. I expect him to be on the main roster before too terribly long. And Keith Lee and Mia Yim are out first. The announcers call them Team Yimitless, which is still a stupid name. It's just Keith Lee's thing with a Y in front because of Mia Yim, and it's bad. And it's so bad. I hope that that's not going to be like a thing forever. I hope that's one of those things they just forget about and never mention again. That'd be great. And so we start the match. Johnny and Candace are out. And it starts with a big brawl, and Candace goes to jump at Keith Lee, and Keith Lee catches her and safely puts her down on the floor because he's a gentleman. And Johnny doesn't immediately try and get Keith Lee to put her down, so they're telling a little bit of a story that Johnny is more concerned with winning than he is with his wife. We set up a spot where Mia has Candace, Keith Lee has Johnny. They set them up like a powerbomb and run them into each other back to back. And so they have a spot where Johnny and Candace are on the outside with Keith Lee, and Mia Yim goes to do a suicide dive out to hit Johnny and Candace, but Johnny and Candace both move, leaving just Keith Lee there. And so Keith actually catches Mia Yim. And she says, "Thanks, baby. That was a cool spot. I liked that they moved and tried to set up Keith Lee, but he just simply caught Mia Yim." Every week they're doing something in terms of a feat of strength or something like that with Keith Lee, and it makes him feel very different from everybody else. It makes him feel like a monster and somebody who is capable of doing even more than he already does. They've done a really good job with that. And they're setting up different spots where Candace is hitting Keith Lee, but it's not doing anything. She goes to do a DDT, and he kind of catches her, and Johnny hits an enziguri to the back of his head, and then Candace hits the DDT, and she's so excited she hit it. I wrote in my notes that it's weird that Candace is hitting Keith Lee, but it's not doing anything, because before WWE, Candace LeRae fought dudes on the indies all the time and did just fine. That was kind of what she was known for. And so it's just weird. I understand she's not the same character, but it's weird to see this person who I've seen in intergender matches before hit a guy and nothing happens, and then finally hit a move on him and she's so excited. And so Mia is on the outside of the apron with Candace on the inside, and Keith pounces Johnny, that running tackle, and Johnny goes flying, and it knocks Mia Yim off the apron. And Keith is angry, and then Johnny, while he's distracted, does that apron DDT on him. But Candace was already laying on the floor under Keith Lee, and so when he brings Keith Lee down with the DDT, he brings him down on top of Candace. And so the crowd is counting, but because it's intergender, the guy cannot pin the girl, and vice versa. It has to be the girl and the girl, the guy and the guy. And so Johnny's excited that he hit him with this move, but Keith Lee is now dead on top of Candice LeRae, and when he moves, Candice is just dead. For the rest of this time, Candice is a dead person. And so Keith looks very concerned, and he goes to pick up Candice to help her, and I assume take her to the back. But while he's holding her, Johnny rolls up Keith Lee, so Keith Lee inadvertently tosses Candice backwards and out of the ring, and Johnny gets a three count. So Johnny and Candice win, but again, Johnny wasn't worried about his wife, he was worried about pinning Keith Lee. So I don't know if we're setting something up there. And so Johnny and Candice win, but Candice is doing her best Weekend at Bernie's impression on the way up the ramp. Johnny's holding her up, and he's raising her arm up, even though she's clearly passed out. We go from that to a recap of Damian Priest versus Finn Balor, which was one of the best matches from TakeOver. Priest obviously losing in that effort. And they interview him, I believe it was from In Your House, and the interviewer says that, you know, do you regret going after Finn Balor the way you did? He says, no. He says, I lost fair and square. Finn was the better man. He said, this match was my next step in my name living forever. He said, I think I did that, right? I think my name is closer to living forever. And this is dumb, and no, it's not. You attacked Finn Balor so that your name could live forever, and then Finn Balor went to take over and beat you. That's not your name living forever. That's, who was Damian Priest? Oh, he was that guy that lost to Finn Balor. I don't know that that's what I would want my name to be living forever for. This was just a boring interview. I wasn't sure if they were setting up to turn him face. Seemed like it, based on this and what he does in a little bit. But this was not a good promo in that I don't think the subject matter was good. I don't think it's on Damian Priest. I think that this was just a dumb setup for a promo, and it's just him trying to get his live forever catchphrase out when it definitely doesn't warrant it, because you had a great showing, yes, but all you lost. So, no, it's not. You're not closer to your name living for forever. But that's fine. And so Cameron Grimes is in the back, and he's being interviewed because he's taking on Finn Balor again tonight. Grimes is very confident. He says, I already beat him once, and it felt so nice, I'll do it twice. But he's every once in a while going, I'm not sure why William Regal made this match. I mean, it already happened. I don't know. So there's a lack of confidence that's coming through. And Damian Priest walks up because earlier Cameron Grimes says something to the effect of, what am I going to do, pull a Damian Priest and lose to him? Damian Priest walks up, punches Cameron Grimes in the jaw. Cameron Grimes falls to the floor. Damian Priest says, no, please continue. And it's at this point where I thought that they're turning Damian Priest face, because he had the great showing at TakeOver. His stock has never been higher in WWE. So maybe the beginning of his promo was definitely a babyface, where he said that Finn was the better man, blah, blah, blah. And then he attacked a heel in the back for talking trash about him. So I've always been of the opinion that you're turning face or heel depending on who you're mad at. And he's been mad at heels, so it seems like they're turning him face. I'm not sure how that's going to work with him being a face. I've only seen him as a heel, but he is very talented, so could work. And so we have a recap of the main event of TakeOver, which was the triple threat match for the NXT Women's title, which was Rhea Ripley and Io Shirai in a triple threat against Charlotte Flair, who's the NXT Women's Champion. I saw some confusion about the fact that Rhea Ripley had one white boot and one black boot. People didn't know if that was for, you know, equality with everything that's going on right now. That may have been part of it, but that white boot was from the set of boots she wore at WrestleMania. She had the Vegeta outfit or gear on for WrestleMania when she lost to Charlotte Flair. She's been obsessed with winning the title back, so as kind of a reminder, she wore a black set of gear, so the black boot, and then she wore the WrestleMania white boot, which I thought was kind of a cool homage to it. It didn't look great. initially until I realized what it was, and then I liked it more. I don't want her to keep doing it for all her matches, but I liked it for the story that they told. And that triple threat match absolutely should have been the main event. Because Io Shirai won. And you guys, I was so happy. I was so happy. So they have a fantastic triple threat match. Io is the one that jumps off of the In Your House set, not Johnny. Sorry, Johnny. Io got it. And Io Shirai is your new women's champion. Now, this is great. And I'm not going to go on a rant about how Rhea should have been the champion this whole time. That is how I feel, but at a certain point, you can't complain about something that's just going to happen. You just have to enjoy it for what it is. And if you have been a listener to this show since Charlotte won the title, you know that I have not been the biggest fan of the way that they have used Charlotte Flair. I've never been the biggest Charlotte Flair fan. And it's not for any particular reason other than I've just never felt particularly connected to her, and I've never enjoyed her story. I think she's better as a heel, but still not great, and I think that a lot of it comes from mic work, and that's something that's very important to me in terms of connecting, and I don't feel like Charlotte gets there all of the time. That, of course, saying that she's absolutely one of the best women's wrestlers they've ever had, and she's probably going to retire as the most decorated woman that they've ever had in the company. So when she goes into the Hall of Fame, I would imagine that she's going to break her father's record for title reigns, and to me, that's a big deal. I understand it's predetermined, but championships are still a big deal to me because it shows that the company believes in you enough to put that championship on you, and I've always thought that they were very important. And I will absolutely give Charlotte credit that while maybe she should not have been on every show because there's some burnout factor there, I cannot and will not try and diminish the fact that she went on Raw on Monday, had a great matches, and then NXT on Wednesday, and then SmackDown on Friday. She was quite literally pulling triple duty. She had other championship opportunities. She had the triple threat match on Raw. She's been doing some of her best work. And I like the idea that the women's champion was kind of touring around and showing that, no, this is just because I'm NXT champion doesn't mean I can't hang on the main roster. And initially they put the title on Charlotte so that they could hopefully boost some ratings. That did not happen because that's not how this works. And we tried an experiment that didn't work. I do not think that that is Charlotte Flair's fault. I think that is the fault of the way that they use Charlotte Flair and the fact that they wanted to have their cake and eat it too. They wanted to have Charlotte Flair on the main roster still as if she always was, but they also wanted Charlotte Flair to go back to the homegrown NXT version of herself where she's running on NXT and helping the other women there. That didn't necessarily happen either. Again, not Charlotte's fault, but the way everything was positioned, I don't think she did anything for Mia Yim. I personally don't think she did anything for Rhea Ripley. I know that Triple H said that Rhea losing for long-term storytelling is the best thing that could have happened to her, and I sincerely do value Triple H's opinion. However, he is also the guy that said that Braun Strowman taking over for Roman Reigns at WrestleMania was going to be a story. They weren't just going to throw it out there, and then they exactly just threw it out there. So at this point, I don't necessarily just believe something because they tell it to me. And I don't think that that helped Rhea Ripley. I think it made Rhea Ripley look like she was overconfident and not as good as she thought she was. And that if she challenged somebody from NXT, she may win, but if she challenges somebody from the main roster, she does not have a chance. So overall, I don't think that the Charlotte Flair thing was a success. And I'm glad that it's over because we can go back to Io Shirai, Rhea Ripley, or Io Shirai and anybody. This is the first time she's won the title. And I would be willing to bet that they want to put Charlotte back on the main roster, especially with Becky Lynch having to step away because she is pregnant. So I would imagine that that's what we're going to get. I don't know if she would be on Raw or SmackDown. It feels like Raw because you have Bayley and Sasha on SmackDown, and Asuka is going to go through Nia Jax. Maybe we can set something up there, although I'm not interested in it, but I bet you WWE is. And so I say that to say that, again, at In Your House, Io Shirai won the NXT Women's title. That's excellent. It's the first time she's won it. Very exciting. We cut back again because Cameron Grimes doesn't think that he can compete tonight because he thinks he has a broken jaw. And so an interviewer walks up and one of the referees is talking to William Regal, who's on a tablet. And he's explaining the situation, and Regal says, "Well, take me to Cameron Grimes." And it's at this point where I'm now thinking that this is silly and stupid, because the interviewer holds the mic up to the referee, obviously, but then the interviewer holds up the mic to the tablet when William Regal is talking. And boy, oh boy, I wish William Regal were here in person, because this tablet, if I know WWE like I think I do, that tablet's going to become a recurring character. And the ref takes the tablet, and they find Grimes in the back, who's talking to two women. He's saying he has the night off, and they can go out on the town, and they said, "What about your jaw?" He says, "Oh, my jaw's fine." And the ref is trying to say, "Hey, Cameron, I need to talk to you for a minute," and Grimes is saying, "Hold on, man, I'm busy." Ref says that William Regal is on the line for him, and he immediately jumps and he starts selling the jaw. And he says, "Regal, I don't think that I can compete. I don't think I'm 100%. Regal says, "Well, you seemed fine when you were just talking to those two women, so go get warmed up. It's happening." This was supposed to be funny. And I'm not mad at it, but it's just not my... WWE's version of comedy is not mine. So I just kind of blankly stared at my computer watching it and was waiting for it to be over. And wrote just enough so that I could remember to tell you what happened, if I'm going to be honest with you. So this is over now. And so Tom Phillips is next, and he's talking about Breezango returning. And we have a video package for Breezango. They're basically talking about how they love to entertain fans, but when they came to SmackDown, they kind of became jokes because they were too focused on just being entertaining. And the tag title match with Imperium taking on Breezango is actually going to happen next week. And they're still doing jokes and cracking on each other and Imperium, but they're basically saying that we're going to be entertaining and fun until that first bell rings. And then that second bell rings to start that match, and then we're going to be the best tag team in NXT. So I think they're trying to put a little bit more of a serious edge on Breezango, which is good. I think that they need that. I don't think that they're going to win the tag team titles, but I wouldn't be mad if they did. And I think that them being a little bit more serious helps you take them a little bit more serious. And so I think that's definitely good. And so this was an excellent video package, and it got across their sense of humor, and it got across that we're not just clowns or court jesters. We're great wrestlers, and we're going to prove that going forward. So I think that that's going to be really good for them. I think that's been their only problem. They're both great talkers. They're both great workers. They're great as a team. They're great individually. The problem is that they have not been taken seriously because they debuted as a flamenco dancer and a selfie stick holding fashion model. How would you take those two things seriously? And so hopefully going forward, they can be still their entertaining selves when they're outside the ring. But then when they get in the ring, it's all business. And when something is serious, they can take it serious as characters. And so again, we'll get that tag title match next week. And we cut to the recap of Karrion Kross versus Ciampa. Now, I thought Karrion Kross was going to win. I did not think that Karrion Kross was going to beat Ciampa down basically the whole time. I think that's good. I think that Ciampa is NXT in his blood. I think that he said that if they wanted to call him up to the main roster, he would retire. I don't know that he was joking. I think he was serious. I think he doesn't want to deal with the main roster. Frankly, if I were a wrestler, I think I might be the same way. I just keep me in NXT, please. And when you're in that position, like a Ciampa is, you are going to have to help younger guys kind of get over. And with Karrion Kross and the story that they've told, this is the way to do it. And Karrion Kross, again, beat Ciampa down and beat him. Now, that's the biggest moment of his NXT career. And it felt important, and it felt like he's a monster that can't be stopped, which is exactly what he needed to feel like. And we're told that it's several hours later, and Ciampa's finally coming out of the performance center. And the interviewer is asking him real dumb questions.
He says, was Karrion Kross tougher than you expected?
And he asks,
Ciampa, were you ready for Karrion Kross?
And because those were real dumb questions, Ciampa gets in his car, drives off. I don't know how he was supposed to answer those. Was he tougher than I expected? Yeah, a little bit. Was I ready? Clearly not. Did you see it? Because no, I wasn't, was I? They have interviewers ask real weird, stupid questions. So I don't know if that's Ciampa's lack of confidence now because he got beat down. I don't know if he was just pissed off. It kind of seemed like that. But he just didn't want to talk about it. He hung out several hours after the show ended. So maybe we'll get more about that next week when we have a kind of show proper, not just recapping some of what happened at TakeOver. And so this is kind of odd because they're having Finn Balor and Cameron Grimes again. And it's odd because they're both heels, and WWE doesn't usually do heel versus heel. I think maybe they're more willing to do it since there's not a proper audience, and they've always been weird about face-face or heel-heel. But it's just something that they don't normally do, so it's interesting to see. And the announcers point out that on Sunday, Finn won his 11th TakeOver match, which is a record. I didn't realize that. It makes sense. He's been in NXT twice. He's been around a while. And this match is fine. It's nothing to write home about. I think that I didn't necessarily need it, but I understand why it's here and what they were doing with it. Finn hits the coup de grace and then the 1916 to beat Cameron Grimes. Now, commentary makes a mention that these two are now tied at one win apiece. And at this point, I was thinking, I definitely don't need to see a third match, which seems like what you're setting up. But Finn looks into the camera and he says, I've won a lot of titles, but the North American title? Never. Keith Lee, when you're done playing house, come see me. Okay, Finn Balor versus Keith Lee, I'll take that right now, please. I'll take that right now. Yep, I can work with that. Seems like Finn's going to stay in NXT, obviously. I would absolutely like to see him take on Keith Lee. I could see Finn believably taking the title from Keith Lee. I could see Keith Lee running through Finn Balor. I don't care. I want to see it right now, please. So I am 100% good with that. They have a promo of Timothy Thatcher getting into a ring with some trainees. Basically says, take these waivers and liability forms, take them to your lawyer, have them looked over and signed. He says, because this training will not be for the faint of heart. This training will be barbaric, and it will begin next week. And Timothy Thatcher showed some comedy chops. He showed some serious chops in this. And so I guess next week we're going to go through some of his training regimen, which could be interesting. And so I'm not sure what we're doing next with Timothy Thatcher. Obviously, he just beat Matt Riddle. So that will be interesting, and I like vignettes like this because it gives you more insight into the character, and I can care about them more because of that. So hopefully we get to see that next week, and hopefully it's as good as it looks like it'll be. Next up, we have El Hijo del Fantasma, and Fantasma needs a new entrance theme. I didn't notice it last week. Fantasma has what essentially is just a generic kind of rock theme that doesn't fit him at all and isn't exciting. Boy, oh boy, he needs a new theme. Phantasma is the new cruiserweight champion, and they mentioned that he's going to have to settle the score with Jordan Devlin whenever Jordan Devlin gets back, so that's good, because they hadn't mentioned him in a while, so I didn't know if he was just the new cruiserweight champ, but at some point they're going to have to settle that, and that should be a great match. And Phantasma starts cutting a promo in Spanish, and he's interrupted by Drake Maverick. And Drake gets in the ring, he congratulates Phantasma, and he says, "What we did last week was special. And I want to thank you for the amazing match we had last week." He said, "You deserve to be cruiserweight champion." It's at this point that I wrote that Phantasma appears to understand him just fine. I say that because Phantasma speaks English and Spanish. However, his character, rather King Cuerno, spoke English and Spanish. Phantasma has been presented as somebody that speaks Spanish. But, number one, he understands Drake perfectly. Number two, he's going to speak English in a second. And that ties in a bit to him kind of deceiving everyone. And Drake says that I had a lot going on last week. And I can't help but wonder what would have happened if I didn't have other things going on in my head. And he said, "Now that I'm a full-time member of NXT, I believe and I know I can beat you if you give me an opportunity." Phantasma still understands him. He's speaking Spanish still. He says, "Yes," and extends his hand. Before they can shake hands, the two masked men come out. And they go to opposite sides, and they get on the ring apron, and Drake and Phantasma go back to back like they're getting ready to fight. But then Phantasma turns around. Drake turns around, realizing what happened, and Phantasma headbutts Drake, and they all start to stomp him. So I was real, real wrong about those masked men. I thought that it was obvious that it was Phantasma, but because it was obvious, they were going to have Drake Maverick be the guy who was the head of the masked men. As it turns out, they went with what they set up, which is that Phantasma was the leader. I was super duper wrong about that. And so Phantasma and the masked men go to take off the mask, and it's Raul Mendoza and Joaquin Wilde, who were previously kidnapped, so I guess they were brainwashed and whatever. Phantasma actually takes his mask off, which I was surprised at. And he says, I am Santos Escobar, the NXT Cruiserweight Champion, and no one could touch me. And the other two go off the top rope and hit a double splash. I don't care about that, neither do you. Did you hear what I said? He said his name is Santos Escobar. Santos Escobar is his name. Guys, his name is Santos Escobar. Did you hear me? Because it doesn't seem like you heard me. It doesn't seem like you're reacting as strongly as you should to finding out that Phantasma's new name is Santos Escobar. Because I don't know about you guys, and if you have wrestling promotions, but if you start one, if you want to have a heel that's taken seriously, don't name him Santos Escobar, guys. Guys, that's so bad. Okay, well, he's unmasked now, which they like more, and he's got a new spiffy name, so that's cool. The Undisputed Era are in their locker room, and Strong finds a drawing that Loomis left, and it's basically the three of them bleeding, and they're injured, it looks like. Adam Cole and Bobby Fish walk out, and Strong comes back, I guess, to grab the drawing, and he lingers for a second, and he looks at the door that has a little window in it, and Dexter Loomis is outside looking at him through that window, because he's so creepy. And Loomis is out first, and then the Undisputed Era. Fish and Cole seem relatively fine. Roderick Strong is very hesitant. They go to do that thing where they all hit their pose to the boom in their theme, and Fish and Strong get on the second rope. Strong misses his cue because he's busy staring at Dexter Loomis. He tries to jump up real quick to do it, but it's too late. And he goes, "Dang it!" That was funny. And again, this match is fine. Adam Cole just had a big, grueling match with Velveteen Dream. And Dexter Lumis is beating him down, but it's just fine. It was just kind of a get-through match. And Dexter Lumis has him in the triangle choke, but then there's interference while the ref is distracted, and Roderick Strong hits the enziguri and sets up for Adam Cole hitting the last shot on Dexter Lumis, and Adam Cole beats Dexter Lumis. That seems odd to beat Dexter Lumis, although he's the kind of character that I suspect isn't going to care. He's not so much interested in winning and losing, he's interested in hurting people, and he certainly did some of that. So I don't love that he lost, however, I don't think it necessarily will matter, because his character is one that I don't think needs to be pushed. I think that you can just insert him into any situation, and he clearly is still going to have problems with the Undisputed Era. And they win, obviously, and so Cole is kind of taunting Dexter Lumis, but then Dexter pops back to life, and he puts the triangle choke back on Cole. The Undisputed Era starts attacking Dexter, but the Velveteen Dream comes out. And keep in mind, these are Performance Center athletes in the crowd, and they're getting them to react a certain way. I say that to say there is virtually no reaction for the Velveteen Dream coming out in anything that he does. He is as cold as ever. He's not even hot with the Performance Center people, and that's not good. I don't know if it's the way he's been used. I don't know if it's him. I don't know if it's the controversy that was around him that I haven't heard anything else about. But Velveteen Dream has never been colder, and I'm not sure why. So this does nothing to kind of set this up. And so everybody kind of brawls to the back, and Roderick Strong is running from Dexter Lumis, who's just walking behind him like Jason Voorhees. And it leaves Adam Cole by himself in the ring, celebrating, when the lights go out, and the spotlight's on Adam Cole. And then the spotlight cuts to the entrance ramp, and it's Scarlett. And Scarlett is... She's creepy. She's basically walking to the ring with her hands behind her back, and she has somewhere in between a smile and a grimace on her face, which is an interesting combination of facial expressions when you're walking down to the ring. And she slowly walks to the ring, and Adam Cole is looking around for Karrion Kross. He doesn't come out. Scarlett simply takes her hands from behind her back, and she's holding an hourglass. And by the way, boy oh boy, did I have to spend so much more time than I should have had to spend remembering the word hourglass. In my notes, it says that she places a sands of time into the ring. And here's the thing. I knew that that was stupid, and my original plan was I wasn't going to tell you guys. I'm going to be honest. I was going to lie, because you guys wouldn't know. But then, you know, sometimes you just got to be honest. And I thought an hourglass was a sands of time thingy. And it literally just now occurred to me, it's been hours, that it's an hourglass. So that's where I'm at. She grabs an hourglass from behind her back, and she slides it slowly into the ring, and then rotates it so that the sand is now running through the hourglass. And she starts walking back up the entrance ramp, and Karrion Kross's name and logo comes up, and she's standing with Cole on her left and the logo on her right. She just looks over her shoulder and smiles with the logo in the back. So it looks like next we have Karrion Kross versus Adam Cole. And boy, I knew they were high on Karrion Kross, but boy, oh boy, they're higher on Karrion Kross than I thought. That was fast. Okay. So I presume that Karrion Kross is next, and if Karrion Kross is next, I would assume Karrion Kross is going to win. Okay. That seems fast, but I mean, it makes sense for his character and Scarlett. That would make sense that they would go after the NXT title. So I'm good with it. And it's just left with a shot of Adam Cole in the ring holding the NXT title, just looking at the hourglass and clutching his title. Looks like he might be on borrowed time. So that'll be interesting as well. I don't know if they're going to save that for a takeover or what they're going to do with that. But with that last segment, that means that I am all done. I am all done. This was an interesting show. A lot of the matches were just fine, and that's actually fine because they just did a takeover. Everybody's kind of beat down. And there was a lot of recap of what happened. But more so than previous takeovers, it feels like there were more matches and more setup in this episode of NXT. And so that is good for me because it gives me a lot to talk about. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for listening here and listening to me talk about this week's NXT. Once again, I have been your host, Zachary Smith. Again, if you want to find me on Twitter, I am ZachNXT, ZachNXT. We're always over there talking about wrestling. A lot of times, if you have questions, comments, concerns, anything you want to hear me talk about in the beginning or for NXT or at the end of the show, any questions you have, I'll either get back to you on Twitter or, if it's good, it might end up on the show itself. But if not, once again, for this week, I have been Zachary Smith. You've been great as always. Thank you for listening.